Hello, everyone, and welcome to our call today. It is, we're already in February 2nd, 2011, as we get closer and closer to making it your year. You know, if I mentioned, this is Kurt Mortensen. This is the Influence Call. We'll spend some time talking about a tool of persuasion or influence or even self-persuasion that will help you out. We'll take your questions about the information that we talked about today. Any questions that you're running into, that's what we're here for, to help you out, to make sure you realize that this is a power skill, to really understand human nature, to put you in the it'll put you in the driver's seat of life, and that's what we're going to do. So let's get into it. Break it at any time with any questions as we talk about another persuasion tool. I want to talk about, how do you turn a no into a yes? We know that many times that there's a knee-jerk reaction of no. I mean, you can go to a clothing store, need help. Nice young lady comes up to you and says, can I help you? And you say, I'm just looking. And sometimes people do that to us quite a bit. Just looking, don't need help, I don't need information, where they do need help. They're in the store, or they've replied to information, or they're in trouble. They need your help, but the knee-jerk reaction many times is no. So I want to focus on, first of all, how not to get the no, and how to turn that no into a yes. Realize that we are consultants. When we're out there persuading or selling or influencing or negotiating, we want to be consultants. We want to be consultants, we don't want to be salespeople. Because we know that people will naturally resist a salesperson. Because I know you've met people out there that need your product, like your product, can afford your product, it was a perfect fit, then you never heard from them again. And the challenge is maybe you pushed a little too hard, said something, and realized that a big shift in the world of persuasion and influence is introverts now out-persuade extroverts. Let me repeat that. Introverts out-persuade extroverts because an extrovert comes across as a proverbial salesperson and people will resist that. An introvert is a consultant. They listen and they ask questions. That's why we always look for that doctor-patient relationship. This is what you want when you're talking to someone. You're the consultant. People love to be consulted. Think about it. When you're in a doctor's office, they can ask as many questions as they want. When you have a trust relationship with a doctor, they'll ask you this and ask this. They'll take notes. They'll look this up. They'll do this. And you're okay with that. That's what you're looking for, is that you're the expert and they're the doctor, and they might be the patient, or they're the ones that need the help. That's what you're looking for. And when you have that type of relationship, when you're the consultant, you really can't ask too many questions. So to become a consultant and to reduce that buying resistance, let's talk about a few things that will really help you out. Now, some of these might seem basic, but these are the ones that where most people blow it, where they don't do it very well. The first one is your listening skills. Now, we're all good at hearing, but I'm talking about listening with your ears, your eyes, and your heart. No one's really been trained how to do this. In fact, one of the number one training for Fortune 500 companies is listening training. Now, they'll call it different names because people whine and complain and they moan. But when you truly can listen, the doors of persuasion swing open, number one, and number two, you come across as a consultant. You should probably listen three times more than you talk. In fact, as you look at great persuaders, they tend to listen two to three times more than the average person. Because I'll just put it to you this way. When you can learn to listen, they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. Because if you don't listen, you're just shooting in the dark. It's like throwing darts. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's this. If you're the consultant and you listen, they'll tell you what they need. But the challenge is, no one's ever trained you how to do it. We go through the school system and think we can listen. No, we've learned to hear and put it on a piece of paper. We're always thinking about the response, what to say next, how to overcome the objection, what we should do, instead of truly listening to that person. We're not concentrating. We're looking at our cell phone. We're looking around. We're playing on the computer if it's over the phone. We always jump to conclusions, or we prejudge. Well, they're not interested. They won't do it. It won't happen. If you read Dale Carnegie's book on how to win friends and influence people, the basic is learning how to listen. That gets people to like you. People want to talk about themselves and their problems. That's what a great persuader does. I remember being on a flight from JFK in New York all the way to Los Angeles, and I sat next to this person, and I've known throughout my life that there's a big sign on my forehead that says, "Hi, tell me your life story." Okay? I've tried to get rid of it. I can't. And this guy was talking, and I was listening. We were going back and forth. He talked the whole time. And I did pretty good at listening. And the eye-opener was this. When we landed, he took to me and said, "Kurt, you're one of the most interesting people I've ever met." And this is the best conversation I've had in years. And I'm thinking, I didn't even say anything. I just let him talk, and there's power in it. Now, I know for many of you, it's a bad time management technique. You want to jump in. You want to give them the solution. But a lot of people just need you to listen. So it is good time management to spend more time listening. And when I talk about listening, it's interesting when you look at the Chinese symbol for listening that there is a symbol for an eye, a heart, and an ear all multiplied by 10, meaning you're listening with your ears, obviously, your eyes, you're looking for nonverbal gestures, you're looking for discrepancies between what they say and how they're acting and their gestures, and their heart. What is your instinct, that urge, that intuition telling you? That's truly listening. So why, as a consultant, you have a pad of paper, you're taking notes, you're listening. If you want to say something, jot it down and get it out of your brain so you can really pay attention. And if you really want to learn to do this well, and this takes practice, over 90% of the people out there rate their listening skills as pretty good to above average, and they're not. This is a big complaint against persuaders because you're jumping to conclusions. So if you really want to be effective here, it's actually pretty simple. You want to be the consultant, you listen by giving them undivided attention. They're the most important person in the world. We don't do call waiting. We don't play on the computer over the phone. We think we're getting away with it, but they can tell that you're not truly listening. If we're face-to-face, we're not looking at our watch or our cell phone. We're treating them like the most important person in the world. And we're looking at them with their eyes. That eye contact face-to-face. That's a big one. A simple one, but a big one. You're showing them sincere interest. You can do that by nodding your head up and down and just saying, "Uh-huh, really, tell me more." Again, the most important person on the earth. You keep the conversation going by asking additional questions. "Well, tell me more. Why is that so?" We'll talk more about that in a second. And another powerful technique, especially in negotiation, especially if you're fishing for information, is using silence. People will keep talking. They talk a little bit. You ask them questions, they talk, and then you just be silent, and they'll talk some more. And you're silent, and they'll talk some more. And then ultimately you'll get to the piece of information you need. If you ever seen Barbara Walters do an interview, she can get anybody to cry, and it's usually with silence. She'll have a famous rock star, and she'll say, "Well, tell me about your childhood." And she'll say, and they'll say something. She'll go, "Huh." And she'll be silent. And they'll say a little bit more, and she'll say, "Oh, really?" And she'll turn her head to the side, and she'll be silent. And at the end, they're crying, and they talk about how they took drugs and they had a bad childhood. And she just was silent. And that's a powerful one. And another big one is you always pause before replying. Even though you know the answer, give it 2 to 3 seconds. You're thinking it through, and that makes a big difference. Now, I know this is persuasion 101, but are you talking about where people blow it or where the complaints are? Because remember, I'm interviewing people after they've lied to you and after they've said no. This is a huge complaint. Do not think you've arrived here. This is a very difficult skill that sometimes seems so easy. And on paper, it does look easy, but this takes some great practice. Again, listening with your ears, your eyes, and your heart. Then on the flip side of that is being a consultant, you're learning to ask the right questions. Great persuaders ask 3 times more questions, 3 times, than the average person. Remember, you'll find out exactly what you need to know. Questions create mental involvement, and you need to create your questions ahead of time. Every time you ask a question, it gets answered. It's part of our school training. Now, it's not always out loud. It might be mentally, but it creates mental involvement. And not only that, if you're ever losing control of a conversation, you ask a question. It'll give you control back. It guides the conversation, and you can find out exactly what their need is. And it also, you come across as more trustworthy, more sincere, and more like a consultant. Asking those questions. Very, very important. Creates that mental involvement. It guides the conversation, and you find out exactly what they need. That is the power of questions. Now, the key thing here is you want a pattern to ask the easiest questions first. Get them in a track record of asking those questions. In negotiations, we always do the easiest questions first, and if there's always a difficult question that there's a roadblock, we set it aside because you want to get as many yeses as possible. You look at encyclopedia salespeople. They knock on the door. Do you live here? Well, yes. Okay, obviously, but it's an easy question. Do you love your children? Yes. Okay, and they go through that. And then if you're looking for information, always ask the open-ended questions, the questions you can't answer with a yes or no. Ask those questions. And have a list of questions written out before any type of persuasion encounter. It can be simple things like, well, what do you think about? Or how do you feel about? Or what's important about this? Or what's the most important thing? And then fill in the blank. Open-ended questions. If a genie appeared and made everything look perfect, what would that look like to you? Well, what's important about financial independence? Asking these questions, listening, taking notes, very, very important. Another thing you can do to really understand the turning that no into yes or getting the yes is a persuasion technique called FITD. FITD. It stands for foot in the door. What we're finding is that in the persuasion process, to reduce resistance and to get that final yes, is you need to begin with some small requests and build them up to a larger request. Because most people tend to be very consistent in their behaviors and their answers. If you start slowly getting the yeses all the way along, the easiest yeses first. Let me explain with a study. This was done at a university. They went to these psychology students and they said, this is really important here, follow me on this. Hey, will you participate in a study, a sensory perception study, Saturday at 6 a.m.? Okay, that's a tall order, college students. Okay, will you participate Saturday at 6 a.m. in a sensory perception study? Okay, that was what they were asking. That's what they were trying to persuade people to do. Only 24% of the people they talked to, the students they talked to, said yes. Now follow me here. The next time around, this is all they did. They broke it down into smaller yeses. We're doing a study on sensory perception. Will you participate? Yes. It's on Saturday. Are you available? Yes. It's at 6 a.m. Can you be there? Yes. Now follow me here. They took that one initial request, broke it up into three different yeses. Here's what happened. It went from 24% compliance to 56%. It doubled just by breaking it down into smaller pieces. What does this mean to you? Wow. This is what it means to you. If you're getting a lot of no's, it's because what you're asking is too big. You need to break it down into smaller yeses. Maybe three yeses, maybe four yeses, maybe two yeses. Break it down, and that will double the amount of people that will eventually say yes. We see this in fundraising. If we get someone to wear a lapel pin, they're two, three, four times more likely to donate a month down the road. Just a small yes, a small yes, a small yes. It goes all the way down the path. So part of this, too, in getting that yes is getting a commitment. Now, let me explain commitments here. This is very important. There was a study done on a beach near New York City, and they had a Confederate. Now, that's somebody that's in on the study. Imagine this is what happened. So someone would come to the beach. They put down a blanket and a radio, a CD player, and next to someone about 5 feet away. They'd lay there for a few minutes. They'd get up and walk away. Now, the Confederate, posing as a thief, who was in on the study, came and stole the radio and walked off. And the person 5 feet away is watching this person obviously steal a radio. So you think to yourself, okay, what percent of those people would risk personal harm to stop the thief? And it was 20%. Higher than they thought, 20%. But here's where it gets fun. The next time around, they put down a towel, they put down the radio, They would get up, and before they'd walk away, they'd turn to the person and say, "Hey, you watch my things?" "Yes, it's a commitment. We are programmed to keep our commitments. Here comes a thief to steal the radio." Now it went from 20% to 95% risk personal harm to stop that thief. So your goals of persuaders get a lot of less yeses, a lot of commitments along the way. There was another study done by Knox and Inkster out of Canada at a horse racing track. This is really important to understand human nature. So people were in line to place a bet on a horse. And they interviewed them, and they hit a few questions within the questions they were asking. And one of the things they were trying to find out is how confident they were in their decision about the horse they're going to bet on before they placed the bet. Then after they placed the bet, they had another interviewer, another set of questions, and then they also found out how confident they were in their decision after they made the decision. Realize that the human brain needs to be right. That before they placed the bet, they weren't that confident. But once they put the money down, of course, this is before the race happened, but after they put the money down, they were more confident because they're the type of person that makes the right decision. What that means to you is get them to make a decision. Once they are ready to go, you don't need to vomit the rest of the features and the benefits. Get them going. You can fill in the blanks later, because once they've decided to do it, now the mindset has changed. Because before they do business with you, they're looking for every reason why they shouldn't. But once they find one good reason, now they're going to look for all the reasons why they should. So if you're going to get a commitment, you're going to use foot in the door, understand that small commitments lead to larger commitments. Okay? Small commitments lead to larger commitments, a little bit at a time. Break down your requests into smaller yeses. Written commitments are more powerful than verbal commitments. We train in negotiation. Write it on a napkin. That's better than nothing. If that's all you have, write it down somewhere. Put it in an email. Get it written down any way you can. It's more powerful than just saying it. And if you can make it public, they're more stronger than private commitments. You see this at weight loss centers. You join and you have to call 10 of your friends and let them know what your goals are. It makes it more public. So if you can tell your colleague next door, or you can phone someone, let them know that a deal's been struck, it will stick. It's more likely to stick. That's foot in the door. The one thing I want to point out before we finish up here is I'm telling you that you probably never want to get the no. You need to structure your presentation. You need to structure your presentation so you never get the no. Getting a no is like hitting a brick wall. You want to get all the yeses you can. The no sets you back in your ability to persuade. So here's the important thing. Now, if you are not sure they're ever going to be interested and you think you're wasting your time, you might want to get the no and get them out of your life. But here's the important thing. Once they say no, down the road, it's very difficult to get the yes. So let's talk about long-term persuasion. So if you sense that the timing's not quite right, that maybe in 6 months you could do business together, don't get the no. If you sense that no's coming, you say, okay, you know what? I've got the information I need here. Let me do this. Let me get this and this for you. And what I want to do is get you this information, and I want to follow up with you in 3 months. Is it okay if I do that to find out exactly where you are? And they'll say, okay. You didn't get the no. You left the door open for a future yes. That makes a big difference in future persuasion. Because if you got the no right then and tried 3 months down the road, it's more difficult. Even if they don't remember the conversation, their subconscious does. So do not get the no. Do not let them say no if you want to do business in the future. Just leave the door open to tell you what, I'm going to do this and this, get you more information here, and I'll follow up with you in 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. They say, okay, and that will really help you out. So this is what I want you to work on, your homework. I want you to formulate 10 yes questions, 10 of them, that lead to your call to action. Easiest to the hardest. Lead them down that path. Get the yes, get the commitment, and do it ahead of time. So when you get in the situation, it's not hard. When you get on the phone, it's all mapped out for you. Now you might have 8, you might have 7, you might have 11, but try to get at least 10 questions, break them down to the smallest pieces possible that you use throughout your presentation to get the final let's do business together. You work on these that will reduce the resistance, you become the consultant, and you become much better in the world of influence, which of course, as you know, will increase your success and your income. Any questions about what we talked about today?
I do, Kurt.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you were talking about questions, I just finished studying the law of involvement from your book, and it mentions unstructured questions. And I'm not sure what you mean by unstructured questions. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Did you lose your connection?
It's gone. Kurt, are you there?
Is everyone else there?
Well, that was weird.
Uh-oh, I got kicked out. Paul, you guys still there?
Kurt, are you?
Yeah,
yeah,
we're here.
Oh, sorry about that. Anyway, I looked down and all the lights were off. I heard you were studying law of involvement and you had a question about questions, so let's go from there. Apologize for that. Glitch?
No, that's okay. I was reading about the questions and it brought up it is best to keep the questions unstructured. I'm not clear on what unstructured means.
What was, you remember the context? Was it in, it was in law of involvement?
Yeah, it was under the art of questioning. The paragraph before that talks about first design your questions ahead of time, like you were just telling you. And then it says if you're probing for lots of information, it is best to keep your questions unstructured. The more unstructured the question, the more information you're likely to get.
Unstructured is kind of more of an open-ended. You want to design your questions and know where you want to go, but unstructured means that you wanted to be able to adapt enough to their personality, to their situation, to where you're not sounding robotic, and every question's not structured exactly the same. And so you want to know where you're going with it, but you want to be able to add some what they're saying into your questions so they're not, I guess, getting past the robotic phase where all the questions sound exactly the same, but they sound like you're going, you're working down the path to find out exactly what they need as a consultant.
Okay. All right. What if, say, for instance, I set up an appointment to talk to someone about some products that I have? Would it be best, you were talking about setting up as a consultant instead of a salesman? So, could you give me an idea of? I'm just trying to think of a scenario. In other words, when I call to set up an appointment, it would probably be better to say I'm just looking to see if the products that I have would benefit you, so I would like to meet with you and just ask you some questions to find out if there's a fit there.
It depends. If it's, you know, if it's a friend or somebody you know, you don't need to just, hey, I want to come by and visit and talk about a few things. I mean, the main thing here is the way you don't necessarily say I'm a consultant versus a salesperson. It's kind of how the way you act. You know, you want to act more like the consultant. If it's an internet lead or something like that, you say, well, let's talk about a few things. Let's gauge, you know, how well you'll do in a home-based business, or let's see how the best product fit for you could come across as a consultant. So I think the main thing is you don't always have to say, well, I'm a consultant. It's more in the way you act and how you come across, more so than saying it right up front.
Okay.
But it would work a lot better. Again, with a friend, it wouldn't matter, but a lot of your internet leads, you'll do a lot better. So, you know, represent this. Let me ask you a few questions to make sure it's a good fit, and tell me what you've tried in the past. And so you never really said you were a salesperson or a consultant, but now you're asking questions to make sure that you, coming across, that you have their best interest in mind.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right. Uh-huh. Any other questions out there? Oh, you guys are easy today, huh? All right. Well, come to class with your questions. We're going to move the replay line over to a website called Why Persuasion, whypersuasion.com. If you want to listen to the replay, give us 24 hours to put that up. So whypersuasion.com. The other one will be up and running for a while, too. So whypersuasion.com if you want to listen to the replay. But the key thing is, focus on these tools this week. Make it part of who you are. And then, of course, come to class with any questions that you have. And you master this skill to make a big difference. Big, big difference. So we'll let you go unless there are any last-minute questions before we let you go.
No.
All right. Wish everyone a massive success, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Good night, everyone. You're so
Bye.
Welcome. Good night.
Bye.
Right.